Sup, fools? This is the QTR Podcast. Today is September 15th, 2018. And fear not, ladies and gentlemen. Please, keep your seats. Fear not. According to me, the implosion of the global economy, as well as any and all financial common sense, is taking place on or perhaps even ahead of schedule. So we're going to start off on a good note. With that being said, let's get some of this shit out of the way. First and foremost, I'm not a financial advisor. What do you think about that, folks? No RIA, no Series 63, no Series 7, no CFP, no CPA, no CFA, no CAIA, nothing. It's just my name, and then there's no letters after it. And before my name, there's no title either. I don't want to be called Mr. What does he say in The Simpsons? The last time I was called Sir, it was followed immediately by, "You're making a scene." This is not investment advice. Please consult your personal financial advisor. Or turn on Fox Business News or CNBC or Bloomberg, where there's a bunch of other people that don't have any of these credentials either, all on television talking about finance. That's something that baffles me, folks. You guys think Liz Claman is a level 3 CFA candidate? I don't know about that one. The point of the matter is, do your research elsewhere, okay? These are my opinions. They're for humorous purposes. I encourage people to get drunk before or during my podcast. Doesn't really matter to me, folks. As long as it's one of the two, you're going to be all right with me. This is not Steve Mnuchin commenting on GDP for next quarter, okay? Thank you very much, folks. And personally, I think that's the best part about this podcast. With that being said, this podcast is also brought to you by my Patreons. Patreon is a service that allows you to make a recurring monthly donation to the QTR Podcast so that I can pump this shit out ad-free and nonsense-free. That's right, folks. No advertisements before the QTR Podcast, which is good because based on what I'm seeing on television and on the internet, most advertisements are either Jason Bond sitting at that stupid restaurant. Hi, I'm Jason Bond, founder of Jason Bond Picks. If I fucking see that one more time, I'm going to stick this pen through my eye. That's number one. I made $10,000. Look, I'm making $10,000 today. He holds his phone up to the... I don't know if you've seen this advertisement. I get it on YouTube all the time. I used to be a school teacher. Now I'm sitting at a restaurant during the middle of the day shooting this nonchalant commercial. Look at me, just a regular guy, casually sitting around, just got a haircut, wearing a brand new, fresh-pressed shirt, sitting in the back of a restaurant, talking to a camera. This isn't a commercial, I'm just having a little one-on-one conversation with you. And by the way, if you're nice to me after I'm done putting barbecue sauce on my fucking pulled pork sandwich, I'm gonna lean into the camera and share with you the three tips that I use to go from being a teacher, making $33,000 a year, to somebody that's now up $10,000 just today alone on the stock market. Hey, you know what? Go fuck yourself, all right? Thank you very much. If I wanted to learn about technical analysis, I would be going to one of these seminars at a local hotel convention center that they have, you know, where Alex Rodriguez shows up and signs baseballs. We're going to teach you everything you need to know about the stock market. The RSI, the Chaikin Money Flow Indicator, the 20-day moving average, the 100-day moving average. Well, I don't know. It says here this company has $0 in the bank and is leveraged at 50 times EBITDA. I have no clue what any of that means. However, the Chaikin Money Flow Indicator is stating that it could be a good buy here. Combined with some of the coverage I've pulled down from Zach's investment research, apparently this is a buy, this stock. You get what you deserve. You go to those things, folks. I would book that the same weekend as my timeshare information schedule and my Herbalife success training seminar. Folks, I'm going to go away for one weekend. I'm going to come back a billionaire. It's going to be that simple. I'm going to be sitting at my desk, snorting Herbalife protein powder, trading using a bunch of charts, a bunch of equities. I don't even know what they are. Probably not even equities. Soybean futures. No fucking idea what I'm doing. Forex, that's the nice thing about technical trading. You can use it for Forex. You can use it for currencies. You can use it for equities. Yeah, that's great. You can also go and do a color by number somewhere and not risk your entire bankroll while doing it. It's the same type of thing. You look at something on the sheet, it says do this, you do it without thinking about it, and before you know it, you have a beautiful little picture of a farm scene and a couple of little piglets frolicking around in the meadow, you know? Except instead of that, you're leveraging your house unbeknownst to you and putting it all directly into the 3x Gartman ETF because it has recently poked through the 20-day moving average, which is one of three bullish technical indicators that you learned while you were eating a shitty and stale continental breakfast at a Sheraton in Miami somewhere right before Alex Rodriguez signed your baseball and you went home. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you the world of finance, all right? Thank you very much. Back to what I was saying. Jesus Christ. This episode is brought to you by my Patreons. Patreon is a recurring monthly donation service that allows you to contribute to the QTR podcast. Tell you what, folks, no matter how many people send me emails, tweets, etc., telling me what a moron I am and how I know nothing about finance, probably all very true, by the way, so you've been warned up front. Every once in a while, I keep getting a new Patreon that pops in and says, hello, hey, here's a little something to help you out. So I'm starting to think that some people are paying attention. And what do you know about that? So special shout out to my haters. Apparently, I learned this week, not everybody on the internet agrees with me. Go figure. You voice your opinions, which you know are in the minority, and you make them accessible to 500 million people, and apparently not all of those people are going to see eye to eye with you. Folks, I don't get it, but that's all right. So I want to shout out my newest Patreons now that we're 42 minutes into the podcast. Sarah Calaf, what is up? Chris Ward, Kevin DeSaltes. I fucked that up. Sorry. DeSaltes? Kevin? Well, whatever. You can email me with the pronunciation. I'll fix it next time. Joel Case, Chris Schaefer, C.D. Payne. Hopefully no relation to Charles Payne. And if you are, well, then I just lost a Patreon. Russell Valenti, what's up? Coming through in a big way, brother. Ben Birnbaum, Bill Williams, Philip Yelzin, Carl Nixon, the folks over at Stock Sharks, who I know I shouted out last time anyways, but I don't give a fuck. My podcast, my rules. Fools, Dave Osten, and then some old school people, Chris Bede coming through huge, Lynn Holland, what's up, Eli Whittle, probably had to deal with those cotton gin jokes growing up, so super shout out to you, Rod Brooks, Andrea McCarthy, what's going on, John Fadul, Adam Pedraza, Rob Lippich, Austin, Mike Hanlon, Chris Boas, if I didn't get you, I'll get you next time, and a final shout out to all my Patreons whose credit cards have been declined, it shows me. Everybody that's been declined, your names I will not mention, but what I will say is, I know the struggle, all right? You're talking to a guy that once got his credit card declined in front of his girlfriend in college for a Slurpee, all right? We'll talk about that moment at some other point in my life. Thought I was going to have a nice day, mixed the cherry Slurpee with the Coke Slurpee, patting myself on the back for coming up with the cherry Coke Slurpee, even though it didn't exist, thinking I'm some type of master of engineering. Get to the front of the line, swipe the credit card, $1.37, declined. Thank you very much. Okay, so this is a special shout out to my declined Patreons. The struggle's real, fools. I know it is. Anyways, what is going on today? With all of that happy horse shit out of the way, I was hoping to at some point do a podcast today, if that's all right with you guys. I don't know if you guys listened to my last podcast, but if you didn't, it was entitled Our Bullshit Economy, Part 1 of 515, and I'm happy to present to you Our Bullshit Economy, Part 2 of 515. And just leading up to Part 2 here, just thinking about this, I'm starting to think that we might need more than 515 episodes to cover all of this, because the rate at which stupid shit is happening is much faster than I had worked into my discounted episode model, where basically I try to predict how many episodes I'm going to have to do as part of this series, and I model that out like 5 years, and then I discount it 12%, because that would be the discount on me personally. You got to factor in inflation and the fact that if I personally issued a bond, I'd probably have to pay 10% on it, at least. So I came up with the number 515. Now I'm starting to think that might not be enough. Well, if you missed the last podcast, I'm not going to repeat everything I said. The point of the matter was that a former chief economist from the IMF came out and stated publicly at a monetary policy meeting in Boston that he wanted to make the suggestion that the Federal Reserve should buy stocks during the next large recession. And why did that genius idea come to light? Because everybody now, 10 years into the bull market, is starting to realize that perhaps the Fed hasn't been doing what the fuck it's supposed to be doing over the last 10 years. That's right, folks. Just like the commercial, every moron you've ever met in your life has opened an E-Trade account, and over the last 10 years has thrown a dart at companies like Energous Corporation, WATT, and Tesla, and other gems, and they've all been rewarded for their financial acumen by making tons of money. And of course, by financial acumen, I mean inability to even walk and chew gum at the same time, okay? These people are trading, and they're getting rich. This is like the Warren Buffett article that was out last Monday, where somebody said, you know, bubbles are bubbles because idiots, I forget the quote, but the point is morons are making money in this market, and smart people are losing money. So I guess, does that make smart people morons, and morons the smart people? I don't really know how it works. It's like when Pac-Man goes out one side of the screen, then comes in the other side, and the colors are all inverted. Maybe we're in the bizarro world. Contributing to that, though, and contributing to my now newly held belief that we are, in fact, living in the bizarro world, we get great ideas like this from the former chief economist of the IMF. So, instead of lowering interest rates while the stock market was ripping, the Fed did nothing. They sat on their hands, and they took every FOMC meeting as an opportunity to talk about how we're still in the recovery, and how we need to be cautious, and we need to keep an eye on inflation, and we need to keep an eye on wages, and we need to keep an eye on labor. Oh, fuck, forgot to turn that speaker off, huh? That's right, folks, it's a professional operation I got here. Regardless, as this was happening, and as they were spending 10 years keeping an eye on inflation and keeping an eye on unemployment, the stock market was doubling, okay? Employment was going to near all-time lows, and everything that would be quote-unquote necessary for a recovery, if you want to call it that, we'll just call it that now. I mean, you know, you and I both know that's bullshit, but that's what we'll call it for now. Everything that you would need for a recovery has happened. So one would think naturally, as that would occur, the Fed would start to think to themselves, maybe this is a good time to raise interest rates. Now, there's been a lot of nonsense about tapering and reducing the size of the Fed's balance sheet. For the most part, that hasn't really happened in any meaningful way at all, not even close. And maybe the last 2 years, we've heard a lot of nonsense and bullshit about interest rates coming up. But the fact of the matter is that interest rates will probably stop somewhere around 3%. They'll probably, you know, the Fed says normalize, which is just their way of saying, here's where we think it should be, regardless of the credit supply and the demand for credit. They're just going to guess as to what the best number is for interest rates. Like a mob family, they're just pulling all the strings.
Christopher, we don't need no fucking supply and demand, all right?
They're just out there saying, 3% looks good. Why? Well, we don't really know why. Sure, a low interest rate policy makes sense if you are scared completely shitless and waiting for your piss to dry about a credit bubble bursting, which, by the way, folks, is inevitable. Credit bubbles will come and they will go as long as people have a tendency to take on credit and buy things that they can't afford, which is just human nature. Normal human psychology is always going to happen. As sure as the fucking sun will rise, bubbles will burst. So this is a normal occurrence. Now, if you ask most people, they're going to tell you it's normal that you have a credit cycle come and go over the course of what? 7, 8, 9, 10 years? It's just what happens. It's what's always happened. So it's relatively normal. But by the way the Fed talks about it, you would think that instead of a couple of guys defaulting on their fucking Home Depot credit card, you're talking about 100 years of famine, plague, pestilence, war, and nuclear Armageddon. Because apparently none of these cycles are allowed to end. When you think of a cycle, you think of whatever it is. If it's a demand cycle for a company, it's called a cycle because it starts somewhere, it goes up, it goes down, and then it returns back to where it started. It's cyclical. That's what that means. but the Fed wants a cycle to look like you took a ruler and placed one end of it at the bottom left corner of a page of 8.5 by 11, and you put the other end at the top right corner of that same page of 8.5 by 11, and you drew a straight line going up. That's what a cycle looks like to the Fed. And they are so scared shitless for anybody in the banking sector to have any type of bubble burst or cycle end that they will do anything to try and prevent it. In layman's terms, what this means is that the Fed thinks that the normal course of business for an economy is that it should always be doing well. That's it. And that, in even more layman's terms, or laywoman's terms, okay, I gotta throw that out there, is that the entire thing is going to be rigged. Which, by the way, if they could do it and there were no consequences, it wouldn't be a bad idea, right? Everybody would be happy. Everybody would be a billionaire. We'd all be living in a utopia. I'd be driving a Lamborghini instead of a Honda that's badly in need of a back bumper. We could rig the system and everybody was fine, I don't think anybody would complain. The problem then, of course, would be once everybody's a billionaire, everything would cost according to what it should cost people that are immensely rich. So the price of a coffee would go up to $280. Plus, the consequences on the economy as a result of printing the amount of money that we would need to make that utopian dream come true would be the dollar turning into something resembling the love child of the Venezuelan bolivar and the Turkish lira if the two of those currencies got together and had a night out on the town and then had a little currency baby. It would be a disaster. It would look like the unibrowed baby in The Simpsons. And so every once in a while, one of these articles breaks and it riles me up, so I come into a podcast or I put out a couple of tweets. And that was the case with my last podcast. Now, I wasn't really going to do anything this weekend until on Friday, I stumbled on a little article by Reuters entitled the following. You ready for this one? Yellen: Fed should commit to future booms to make up for major busts. All right, first off, Janet Yellen should be on a beach right now looking at the bottom of a tequila bottle instead of continuing to opine on what the Fed should or should not do. All right, if I was Janet Yellen, I would be so happy that my tenure ended at a time directly after the stock market had doubled, which, by the way, everybody in this country equates to prosperity. I love that. I would be so happy that that happened and that the shit had not hit the fan on my watch and that I was able to get out before the Trump presidency really took hold, but I was still able to get some of the benefits of the tax cuts and the kind of market's future perception of what type of deregulation and policy Trump would put forth. I would just get out, write the book, do the speaking tour, collect your fees, then go work as a consultant, take your money, take your fame, take the fact that I got a bunch of people on Twitter telling me, you don't know anything about the economy because Janet Yellen was the most successful Fed chair in history. Yeah, as I said on Twitter, how do you define success? I can go turn the printing press on. I do it all the time. I have an HP LaserJet right here sitting right next to me. I'm fully capable of going over to that printer, powering it on, pairing it even wirelessly with my computer. No wires involved, folks. Like Bernanke said, and we have this technology called the printing press. It's called a printer, dildo. They've had it since like the 60s. This fool is talking about it like he's discovered some type of alien technology that has eluded us for centuries. Guys were printing shit on papyrus 2,000 years ago. So the point is, Yellen should be on a beach right now. Just go, Janet. Go to Turks and Caicos. Ride the horses on the beach. Stay out late. Hit the craps table just for fun. You imagine that feeling? You're the former Fed chair that has helped rig the entire global economy as we know it. And then all of a sudden, you're at a craps table where the saying, the house always wins, means a little bit something different to you. Go out, get plastered on top shelf liquor, and have yourself a ball. I don't need you returning to the cable news networks and causing headlines like this one on Friday that has since pretty much disrupted my thought process for the whole weekend so far, though I'm hoping by the end of this podcast I will have made a full recovery. So the headline says, Fed should commit to future booms to make up for major busts, and here's what the article reads. The U.S. Federal Reserve should commit to letting economic booms run on enough to fully offset collapses like the 2007 to 2009 Great Recession, former Fed Chair Janet Yellen said on Friday, urging the central bank to make, quote, lower for longer, they're talking about interest rates, its official motto for interest rates following serious downturns. Yellen's approach, which comes in the wake of complaints by the Trump administration about Fed interest rate hikes, by the way, which is fucking totally the opposite of what they were saying during the campaign, could imply a looser monetary policy stance amid Fed officials' concerns about tight labor markets and greater financial stability risks after a decade of low rates. Fucking newsflash! Interest rates are not going to solve tight labor markets, and they're not going to create greater financial stability. It's that simple. We never had 2008 before 2008. And the size of the next catastrophe is going to be predicated on how much of this type of thinking permeates through the government, through the Federal Open Markets Committee, through the Bilderberg Group, all the people that make all the big decisions. I don't know who they are. You ever read those articles? They all meet out in the woods in California somewhere and set a 50-foot wooden owl on fire, and then everybody jerks off in front of it. No clue what that is, folks. Not much of a basis for making any type of major decisions, if you ask me, but what the fuck do I know? As my haters will tell you, I'm definitely not an economist, but that's not how I make my decisions. Maybe that's why I'm not ruler of the free world. Let's just put that aside for a second. And I know there's like 5% of you, by the way, is like, you're mixing it up with Burning Man. I'm not mixing it up with Burning Man. There is a group of people that goes out into the woods and they set a giant wooden owl on fire. And it's like the 100 most powerful people in the world. Look it up. I'm sure InfoWars has something to say about it. Never mind, I forgot they've been banned completely from the internet and from everywhere. That was a sweeping decision. Must have been the Bilderberg Group involved with that one, folks. But Yellen needs to realize that lower for longer is not a solution. It's a problem. And if this is this woman's thought process 10 years into our quote-unquote recovery, how long does she think that we can keep things like this? Just wondering. 10 years is not good enough? We can't let the credit cycle cool off here a little bit? I mean, at some point, we're not going to have a choice. That's going to be nasty. When the Fed tries to do something, and the boat starts taking on water, and they got a bucket, and they're filling it up with water from the front of the boat, and they don't even realize they're turning it around, just throwing it into the back of the boat. Actually, that's pretty much what we're doing now. At some point, the Fed's just going to be taking buckets of water from outside the boat and putting it inside the boat. Are we doing this right? They'll write a book about that too. The Courage to Act. That's right, Bill. I saw that my boat was doing fine and coasting easily along the water. So I decided to take this Home Depot paint bucket, which I purchased with my Home Depot credit card, which I have since defaulted on, fill it up with water and start, well, filling the boat up with water from the river. Yeah, that's right. Everybody was astonished once the boat started to capsize and we started to go under. We all looked at each other, and we asked each other, how could this have happened? How long does Yellen think this should go on? 17 years, 20 years, 25 years, 30 years, 100 years? What are we doing, folks? How long are we going to push out treasury bond maturities? How soon till we're in negative interest rates? When do we start printing trillion-dollar bills? That's the direction we're heading in. That really is. People say, oh, well, the United States is the reserve currency, and so as long as everybody has confidence in the United States, we're going to continue to... Our actions will lead the world. And confidence will not be lost from the United States. Well, folks, what happens when we don't become the reserve currency? What happens when we don't become the nation that everybody is the most confident in? What happens when that becomes China? Or maybe even one of these other countries that has gone ass up and decides after hitting the fucking Nintendo reset button to come back and try to run their economy with some semblance of common sense. Wouldn't that be the ultimate irony? Like Venezuela right now turns around and says, look, we don't know how to put this, but the currency is worthless and the entire economy is completely fucked. So what we need is for everybody to close up all businesses and to take all of your bolivars and light them on fire and take all of your personal property and light that all on fire until we have scorched earth the entire nation. Then, from there, we're going to take whatever the country still holds in gold reserves, probably 6 ounces of gold, and we're going to peg that to our new currency called the new Venezuelan dollar. And then from there, we allow the country to undergo horrific austerity, right? Nobody wants that, okay? I understand that, folks. This is just a hypothetical. I'm not advocating starvation and famine. But just hypothetically, stay with me here. The country then starts to rebuild itself from the ground up, okay? Like guys with hammers hammering stones and turning them into wheels. And they start to take these wheels and they start to export them for pennies. And eventually, over the course of a century, Venezuela becomes an economy again, where every dollar, every new Venezuelan dollar is somehow, even maybe a very, very, very tiny bit, pegged to the country's gold reserves. And at any point, somebody can come turn in their dollar and get their 1/1,000,000th of an ounce of gold, or 1/1,000,000th of a gram of gold. And from there, Venezuela starts to operate its economy in a little bit more of a classical fashion. By that time, our national debt has turned into $900 trillion. And the Chinese and the Russians own all of our gold. Now, who's in a better spot? Venezuela or us? Now, if you don't think that that kind of shift, okay, that was hyperbole, that was gross exaggeration for humorous effect, but if you don't think that that type of economic shift, even a microcosm of it in a very small degree, can happen over a very long period of time, I would argue that you're mistaken. So, guys like me will be wrong, and you can call me wrong. I don't care. Everybody does. Guys like Peter Schiff will be, quote-unquote, wrong. Yeah, they're going to be wrong as long as this charade holds up. But we need to get smart. So many people voted for Trump because during his campaign, he was saying we're in a big, fat, ugly bubble. And he was 100% right. And now he takes over as president, and he's like, oh, everything's great. Unemployment's at lows, the stock market's at highs. Everybody's whistling zippity-doo-dah out of their assholes. It's fantastic. And that, folks, is all you need to know. Trump is a great example of what happens to economists, politicians, and everybody who may or may not, Bill Fleckenstein will argue that they don't. I still think some people do. Realize that the right thing to do economically is not going to be popular. And because the popularity contest that starts in fucking high school never ends over the course of everybody's lives till they're 80 years old. You got old women beating each other with walkers at these senior citizen communities over who's going to run for treasurer next year. The popularity contest never ends. It's like that Seinfeld episode where Morty Seinfeld is running for the head of Del Boca Vista. And him and Jack Klompas have a rivalry with one another. And Klompas is trying to stop him. And Jerry gets down there and he's like, what the hell is going on in these communities? This is the popularity contest that just never ends. And because of that, because of the ego of the people that are in charge and the inability to remove themselves from this popularity contest, or just the fear of not being reelected, which probably has a lot to do with it, that we remain on the path that we're on now, which somebody like Janet Yellen, who definitely knows more intricate and nuanced financial terms than I do and is certainly smarter than I am and definitely better educated, somehow this makes sense to her. Just like it makes sense to Jerome Powell. Just like it makes sense to Donald Trump. Well, now that he's the president, it makes sense. But before he was, he ran to try and appeal to the silent minority by saying that we were in a big, fat, ugly bubble. I think those were his exact words. We're in a big, fat, ugly bubble, okay, folks? But he was right then. But what happens? Nobody wants this bubble to burst on their watch, which is why I'm astonished that Janet Yellen is even talking about this. I mean, this is like you rob a bank, you get away with it, instead of taking your $40 million in bearer bonds and sitting on a beach earning 4% or whatever he says in Die Hard. Instead of doing that, this would be like the next time the bank gets robbed, going back to the scene of the crime to tell the latest bank robber that he is breaking into the safe the wrong way. And that makes sense. And folks, I gotta tell you, look up this article. It's on Reuters. It's called Fed Should Commit to Future Booms to Make Up for Major Busts. And look at the picture of Janet Yellen. She is gazing somewhere. I don't know where she is, folks. She appears to be in the same place that Ruth Bader Ginsburg was during that State of the Union. Just glassy-eyed. Fucking trashed off the Cabernet or whatever she was drinking before she got there. Look, guys, I'm not happy with where we are now in terms of how we think about our monetary policy and the way that it's been implemented. I don't know if we're past the point of no return or not. As many people have said, yeah, if we had just taken the medicine in 2008, we'd probably be having a legitimate recovery right now. And that's probably the truth. And I don't know if we're past that point of no return yet. I mean, if we took rates up to 6% right now, would it be catastrophic, unstoppable Armageddon? Maybe. Maybe. Maybe not. But maybe we take them to 4 or to 5. Or at least, at the very least, we commit to not taking them back down to 0. Regardless of whatever little, tiny, miniature bubble bursts in the future. Because if we continue along the lines of economic thinking and monetary policy thinking that the Fed needs to intervene every time somebody gets an overdraft fee on their bank account, we're just leading ourselves into disaster. And you don't have to take my word for it now, because it probably won't happen now, 5 years, 10 years, whatever. I'm not guaranteeing it. It's like somebody said, Iron said to buy gold at 1200. First off, I don't give recommendations, number one. Number two, it's been 5 months since I said that. Let's talk to me again in 15 years. Let's see where we're at. How about 30 years? The fact that the consequences from these type of actions do not come immediately is what makes this policy so seductive. It's what makes it so easy to get past Main Street, and ultimately is going to be the reason that we don't see the next big crisis coming. And if it's a dollar crisis or a sovereign debt crisis, we're going to have a big problem. And everybody's going to be sitting around on that boat. And Jerome Powell and Donald Trump and Janet Yellen and Alan Greenspan are all going to be sitting there with buckets, and we're going to be looking around going, who filled this boat up with water? And instead of pointing to them, we're going to look around and say, well, I guess we just need a bigger boat this time. Except there's one problem. The last boat was bigger than the whole lake. And the boat store is closed, bitches. They gotta close at some point. Those employees have families. They need to go home. They need to rest. Jesus. God. All right, it's Saturday night, and I got shit to do. I feel like Mo Sizlak on The Simpsons when he's like, hey, I got a hot date tonight. He's hooked up to the lie detector. I gotta go. I got a hot date tonight. All right, a date. All right, dinner with friends. All right, dinner alone. All right, I'm gonna sit at home and I'm gonna ogle the women in the Victoria's Secret catalog. All right, I hope everybody has a good weekend. I will definitely be back next week. Got some good guests on tap for those of you that are tired of just listening to my diarrhea of the mouth. I will have some new people on. And once again, quick shout out to my Patreons. Guys like MRC42, Mike, Eric Penner, Jean Goulet, like that one, Brendan Illis, Aaron, John Sumner, Mike Embley. Don't forget, you guys, I appreciate the support very much. All right, see you guys soon. Peace!